So, into section 2C.
Did anybody want to ask me about anything from 2B or earlier stuff?
Okay, so from 2B we have the definition of basis, right? It's a list that is a linear, that is both linearly independent and spun. If you want to make it, you know, more precise, you're talking about a basis of a vector space, say a basis of V, right? And list of vectors. So for this course, we're just doing finite lists generally, right? You could have an infinite list of vectors that could be a basis, but be a little more careful about what it means to span and to be linear independent. Say it's a finite list, okay? Spanning. Let's remember what this means. So this would say that for every vector W, I'm lapsing into the logical symbols here. Let's see if I can do it in English. For all vectors in the space, maybe the best word is for each. So for each vector, there are scalars, right? So A1 through AN in the field, right? Such that W is the linear combination of the V's using those A's as the coefficients. And the linearly independent part, one way to think about it is that the A's are unique for anything in the span. And another equivalent way to characterize it is that for every list of scalars, so these are real or complex numbers, so for every list there, repeats are allowed, by the way, right? Just for any list of n scalars, if this combination of the vectors is zero, as in this adds up to the zero vector, then all of those coefficients are actually the zero scalar, right? The real zero or the complex zero, right? So a basis has both these properties at the same time. And, crucially, we have this restriction on lengths. This goes back to 2A. If you have a linearly independent list in V, its
no longer, right? So if you have, you know, 10 linearly independent vectors, then you can't have, say, just 8 spanning vectors. Right? Every linearly independent list of vectors in V is no longer than any list that spans V. So if I have 12 independent vectors, then to span the whole space, I need at least 12 vectors. Or another way to think about it, if I have 22 vectors that span the whole space, then it's impossible to have 23 independent vectors in the space. And that leads to the definition of dimension. If I have two bases of a common vector space, the length is the same. Okay. Now we're into 2C, right? And given this fact above from 2A, this is actually easy to prove. Okay. Their lengths are the same, and that length is the dimension. That with DIM, the dimension of V, right? Okay. Proof?
How is this proved in the book? It's a short proof. It's like 3 lines.
It would be 2 sentences or something, right? How do you prove it?
Since both lists span the space, you can take the U list and say that it can't be bigger than the V list because the V spans the space, and for it to be linearly independent, it can't be longer than spanned by the other theorem that we have. And if you just switch them around, you can say the same thing about V not being longer than U, so they have to be the same length.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're bases, then they're independent, right? This is linearly independent, and the U's are independent, and the V's span. I guess I'll just put it like this. They're independent, and they're in the span of the V, of the V's. Okay. So I guess that should probably just be the end of the sentence, right? So, M is at most N, right?
We're inside the span of n vectors, so there's not room for more than n independent vectors.
And then by symmetry, right? Just switch the two lists and apply the same argument. And you get that n is at most n. Or sorry, n is at most m, right? So I don't need to repeat the argument, but just swap the roles of U and V
lists,
and then you'll swap the roles of M and N in this argument. So
they have to equal each other
because the inequalities go both ways.
It's a nice little trick.
It's like when you have to prove that two sets are equal. You prove A is a subset of B, and you prove B is a subset of A. Therefore, A and B are the same sets.
Sometimes the same method works for numbers, right?
Get the comparisons both
ways. And so, what else can we say about this?
That's the proof now. From applications. Let's say I want to prove the dimension is at least some number C, right? All I need to do is find what? Well, I don't have to find a whole basis. I can do something slightly easier. I just need to find a list of length C that is
linearly independent,
right? Because we can take any linearly independent list is at most the length of the basis, right? Because the basis spans, right? Analogously, if you want to prove that the dimension is at most C, okay, well, then what do you need to find? Need to find another kind of list of length C. What kind of list? Well, no, because see, if they're independent, that gives us the independent list could be shorter than a spanning list, right?
And the basis is independent and spanning. But if you say take a basis and throw away one of the vectors, it's still independent, but it's not spanning anymore.
So if I had C independent vectors, the dimension could be higher, right?
Because maybe those C vectors are part of a basis, but not all the basis, right?
In fact, that's true. Any independent list in a finite dimensional space can be extended to a basis. We did that last time. But there's another direction.
Any spanning list can be shrunk down to a basis, right? If
it's spanning, but it's not independent, you've got some redundancies, right? Some vectors in the span of the others. And you just start throwing away the redundant vectors until the whole list that you've got left is independent, but still spanning. Okay? So if you want to find... Find C vectors that span V, right? And to be clear, I mean vectors in the space, right? In case you're thinking we're in a subspace or something.
So you find...
five vectors that span V, that means the dimension is at most five.
Maybe you have to remove a few of them to get it down to independence as well.
But the dimension can't be more than five,
right? Because
a basis would be independent and spanning, right? independent can't be longer than 5 if you've got a list of length 5 that spans. Questions or comments?
Okay. Here's a nice little exercise. This is a kind of similar to exercise we did last time.
So I'm thinking about exercise number 8.
But maybe before I jump into it, I should give 2 more of those little applications.
Here's a nice thing. What if I already know the dimension? And I give you a list that spans V, right? And that list is the same length as the dimension. If you have a spanning list of the right length, it's automatically a basis. Because if it wasn't independent, you could start throwing away vectors to make it independent, right? Until you got a shorter basis. But all the bases are the same length, right? So there can't be any redundancies, because if there were, you'd get a basis that was too short by throwing away some vectors. My assumption, if the dimension is C, all the bases have to be length C. So you can't shrink this down without losing span. So actually, if it spans, then it's already a basis. So if you know the dimension, then you just have to get one of the properties. Similarly, if the dimension is C, and I have a list of length C of independent vectors in the space,
then again, it's actually also a basis. They also have to span. Because if they didn't span, I could find another vector outside of the span that was independent from these, and then do that again and again until I got up to a basis. But then I'd have a basis longer than C, and all the bases by assumption are like C.
So yeah, finite dimensional vector spaces are nice in this regard.
I want to look at
number 8. So we're looking at fourth degree polynomials with real or complex coefficients, depending on which field F we pick, where the integral from negative 1 to 1 of P is 0. If you're not comfortable with that notation there, throw in the dummy variable, okay, and write it like this. X being the dummy variable there.
Okay. And
find a basis.
This is nice. It brings in a little bit of calculus, right?
Can you think of a function, a polynomial of degree at most 4? Say, so think of a simple polynomial where if you integrate from negative 1 to 1, it comes out 0. X. Yeah, any odd function will do.
Okay.
So how about we start there. Let's call this U1 will just be X and U2 will be x cubed, right? Okay. And these are independent, right?
You can't take any multiple of these, right?
These were equal for all x, right? So that's the sense of equality of the polynomials, right? Then you'd have to have the coefficients a and b be 0, right?
Because when we say the polynomials are the same, we mean that if you plug in any x,
it's going to give you the same number, right? The coefficients.
Right? Okay.
But, is that everything, though? I mean, could we cook up a polynomial that just used even powers, something like that, and the integral still came out 0? It'd be nice if we could get something independent from the first two. So let's try and avoid x and x cubed coefficients. Let's just use even power coefficients, like constant, quadratic, quartic, right?
X to the fourth minus x squared.
Not quite. We can make it a little simpler. What if we did x squared on a constant, right? Well, we'd have to pick the constant so it comes out 0, right?
So let's think about this.
So about x squared plus mystery number, right? Right, what's that going to be? It's going to be the integral of x squared, that's x cubed over 3, right? Indefinite integral, right? Yeah. And we got to plug in 1 and negative 1. Okay, so you get 1 cubed minus negative 1 cubed, so 1 minus negative 1 all over 3. So 2 thirds, and then 1 minus negative 1 in there. Right? Mm-hmm. So we want that to come out to 0, right? Yeah. So here we go. Let's let u3 be x squared minus a third. Okay? And let's do essentially the same trick with the quartic. Okay? If we can go up to degree 4 here. So it's all the same, except now it's a fifth instead of a third. Because again, you know, you're taking an odd power of 1, which will give you 1, minus an odd power of negative 1 there, which will give you negative 1. So 1 minus negative 1 is 2 again. So, yeah. Okay. Maybe I need to put a word in there. So let u3 be x squared minus a third, and let u4 be x to the fourth minus a fifth. Okay? So, what do you think? Are these four independent? If you had to guess, would you go yes or no? What do you think? Okay. Anybody else think they're independent? Anybody want to go against Angel here and say they're dependent? How can we find out?
Well, let's suppose there was a combination of these, a linear combination. Right? So some numbers from the field, so just real or complex numbers here, depending on our choice of f. And suppose that this linear combination makes these polynomials. So I'll just go ahead and write out the polynomials. So ax plus bx cubed plus c times x squared minus a third plus d times x to the fourth minus a fifth equal the zero polynomial. So equality for all x. Well, we just group the like terms now. So there, the x coefficient is just a. So a has to be zero. The cubic coefficient is just b, so b has to be zero. And the constant and quadratic and what's the quadratic coefficient? Right? It's just c, right? What's the quartic coefficient? It's d, right? And if you looked at the constant coefficient, it would be you know, negative c over 3 minus d over 5 equals 0, right?
There's five coefficients. They all have to be 0 for the polynomial to be 0 everywhere, right?
That's supposed to be a cube up there, sorry. And then here we have the x squared term, right? And there's only one of them. There's only one quartic term, right? And the last two terms come together here. But we don't really care about that because we already see from just considering the non-constant coefficients that there is no non-trivial zero linear combination
of these four polynomials. The only multiples of these four polynomials that add up to the zero polynomial, there's only one such multiple. It's when you just take zero times each of them and add them up.
Okay.
So, we've got four independent vectors. Linearly independent. Okay.
Now,
this question is,
do we span yet?
Do we span our subspace, or do we need another vector? I claim that we don't really need to do any more hard calculus. I mean, not even that hard, to prove that we have already got a spanning list. And I want to use these dimension-type arguments to prove it. Okay? I keep hitting that button. So, there's one dimension I know for sure, right? I haven't proven that the dimension of this subspace U is 4 yet, although I think it is. But what dimension do I know?
What's the other vector space in this problem?
P4.
And what's its dimension? 5, right? You've got the 5 possible coefficients. You've got the basis of 1, x, x squared, x cubed, x4, right? So, let's see.
Like what's the difference between P4 and that up
there? Well, U doesn't have everything in P4.
And on P4, we're saying
all the polynomials of degree at most 4.
Okay.
That's just the author's notation for it. If you're reading one of my papers, P4 would probably mean something like all the subsets of F of size less than 4, but that's because I'm a set theorist, but he's doing algebra, so that's his notation for that space of polynomials. There's your basis of length 5, so the dimension is 5. Okay?
Yeah. Okay, so what I'd really like to prove is that these four vectors are a basis.
So if they're the right length, right? This thing here.
if I have four independent vectors and the dimension is four, then it's also a basis, right?
The spanning will come for free.
Okay. So if the dimension of my subspace is four, then since I've got independence, then it'll also span. It'll be a basis. So I just need to
show
that the dimension is 4. Okay?
Well,
we can use that that trick before, like the proof that any two bases are the same length prove two inequalities to get an equality. We can do the same thing here.
Okay?
Remember, if you have a bunch of independent things, that's a lower bound on the dimension, right? So we have four independent things. So the dimension is at least 4.
Okay.
Okay. So if I could just show that the dimension is not 5 or more, then I'd be done, right? Okay. So here's my intuition on this. I've got a space of dimension at least 4, right? And it's inside a space of dimension 5. Right? But it's not all the space, right? So could you have somehow a space of dimension 5 inside a properly bigger space of dimension 5? Could you really have a proper subspace the same dimension as the parent space? I don't think so. Yeah. It really seems to break our intuition, right? And we can okay, that's not really true in the infinite dimensional case, but it is true in the finite dimensional case.
Okay.
But we haven't even defined infinite dimension this course. So okay. Here we go. Here's what we'll do. To try and show that that's an impossible situation, we'll suppose the situation occurs and get a contradiction, right? Okay. So suppose the dimension of U was 5 or more, right? Then you could have some V1 through V5... and then continuing, I guess keep going all the way to some, I guess, VM, right, is a basis of okay.
But U is not the whole space, right?
So, for example, right. What's something that's not in there? X squared is not in U, right? Okay. So X squared is not in the span of V1 through, say, V5, right? Well, these V1 through V5, right, these are all independent and spanning, right? I guess to be precise, they span U, right? So these are independent, the first 5, and then x squared is not in the span of them, So I can add x squared to the list, right? Okay.
Not in the span.
Oh, sorry. I lost the slash, right? Yeah, it's not in the span.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's not in the span because these guys all span U. Right? So, and U is a subspace, right?
Anything in the span of those vectors is also in U, right?
So U is the span of the vectors V1 through VM. If m is strictly bigger than 5, then I throw away some of those vectors and I get an even smaller space. Right? But whether I have to throw any vectors away or not, x squared can't be in their span, right? Because the span of these is u. If I throw some away, the span gets smaller. So you get 6 vectors that are independent and they're in a 5-dimensional space. But if I have 6 independent vectors, then that means the dimension of the parent space has to be at least 6. Mm-hmm. But we know it's not. It's 5. So that's how, without doing any more serious calculus beyond recognizing that there's some polynomial that you do the integral here and it doesn't come out 0. You could have even used a constant function like 1. You can see that there just isn't room for the dimension of U to be higher than 4. Right? It's a proper subspace, and in finite-dimensional spaces, if you're a proper subspace, you really do have smaller dimension by this kind of argument, right? Okay, so this is a basis.
So that's how you solve part A. And I guess I take some pictures here. Okay, this one. Okay, and so I guess for emphasis,
we said if the dimension is 4, then we know we have a basis, right? Because we have 4 independent things. So we've shown that the dimension really is 4, by the, right? It's at least 4, and it's not at least 5, right? So let's kind of add a little note here to make it clear that, yes, we really did finish the problem. So we'll say, but the dimension is 4. And we'll put a colon to indicate, okay, here's why. Okay. Now,
let's see what you're interested in. Okay. So, if you wanted to solve an exercise now, or you wanted to see me attempt to solve it, or some combination of those, which exercise from 2C would you pick?
Or if you really don't want it to be on the homework, which exercise would you pick? I'm fine with 11. Mm-hmm. Okay. Suppose that U and W are subspaces of R8, so 8-dimensional real space here, such that the dimension of U is 3 and the dimension of W is 5, and the sum of the spaces, so all the vectors in U plus all the vectors in W, anything of that form, all those sums give you the whole space R8.
Okay, so
I'll keep this little thing with the nice little applications up for reference. To this board. Was it 3 and 5?
3 and 5.
It won't matter. Okay. Okay, so given all that, we need to prove it's a direct sum. So the intuition on this is there can't be room for overlap, right? I mean, if you have three dimensions and five dimensions, and you add it up, you get eight-dimensional stuff, and there shouldn't be overlap. Right? And there's a precise formula in here that actually makes this pretty easy. Right? If you go back a page, right? What's the formula? Mm-hmm.
Intersection U1 intersection U2.
Mm-hmm. So in our case, if we use, I think it's 2.43, so we have the dimension of U plus W is equal to the dimension of U plus the dimension of W minus the dimension of their intersection. And of course, you should read the proof of this. You know, it uses linearly independent lists in a clever way. But we don't need the proof here. We just need to use the theorem itself. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Okay, so we know this dimension. It's 3. This dimension is 5. What's this dimension?
8.
8, right? Because this is the dimension of R8, which has 8. Okay. So, just do some arithmetic, right? The intersection has dimension 0. So, if the dimension of that subspace where they overlap, U and W, it is 0, then what is in this subspace? What vector is in every subspace? The 0 vector. Okay? Is there anything else in this subspace? No. If there was anything else in there, if there was any non-zero vector at all, that by itself would be one independent vector, and the dimension would be at least 1. Vector all by itself, if it's not 0, is already an independent list on its own.
And since the dimension is equal to 1, that means that the only vector in the intersection is 2.3.
Yeah, since the dimension is less than 1. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the intersection is just the 0 vector. So this would be that, if you imagine a picture, imagine, like, since we can't see eight-dimensional space, you can imagine, say, a plane intersecting a line at a point, right? That kind of situation. And
that's almost needed to prove that if it's a direct sum, just that the intersection between those two subspaces is 0?
For two subspaces, yes, right? That's 1.45. Mm-hmm. I went back to chapter 1 and looked it up, right? So since they don't overlap, it's a direct sum. Right? So you're done.
Oh. Guess that one wasn't so hard after all.
I was going to put 11 on the homework, but
I'll have to put a different one in there.
Oh, well.
We can do another one if you want.
What about that?
Okay.
He
won 17. He won 17. Oh, how masochistic.
Oh, yeah. I'm not convinced I can solve 17 for you before we run out of time here. But I wasn't going to give you that as homework either, so so you're safe on that score. But that's an interesting one. Yeah. So.
It's always tantalizing when you're not even told, you know. Can you prove it, or is it a counterexample? Mm-hmm. Interesting question.
Okay. Suppose vectors P0 through PM
are polynomials over the field F. Okay, so that's the space we're living in now. When there's no subscript on the P, then it's actually an infinite dimensional space, right? There's no bound on the degree.
Okay. So suppose I have these. So notice that that's actually m plus 1 many vectors, right? Because we started counting at 0 there. So are such that each pj has degree j.
So if I have that, and each pj has degree j, then I guess okay, 2c number 10, so we want to prove the following. Prove that if I've got these vectors like that, then I've got a basis, right?
For the
subspace where you stop the degree at M. Okay? So just that little counting observation there already gave away part of it, right? What's the dimension of this thing?
M plus 1.
M plus 1, right? Because remember, this guy here has the following basis. 1x, x squared, all the way up to x to the m. M plus 1 things. So our list here has the right length to be a basis, and each of these p sub j's, each of these polynomials in the list has, well, it's
it's in the space, right? Because its degree is not too big. Since we're in that nice situation, we can use one of these little shortcuts here, right? If we can prove it spans, then it's a basis, because it's got the right length. If we can prove it's independent, then it's a basis, right? Basis means it has both those things. But since we've got the right length, we don't need to prove both. We just need to prove one of those two things. Two for the price of one. Question is, which one should we pay for?
What's easier to prove?
Yeah, what's easier to prove? Independence or spanning? If you're not sure, start imagining how the proof would look for one of them, right? If it starts looking ugly, then okay, let's try the other one. Here would be an independence proof, right? Okay, we would, naively, let's just go direct from the definition, right? Suppose A0, P0, plus A1, P1, plus AM, PM equals 0. Then we need to get all the coefficients to be 0. Right? Spanning, right? What would we have to do? We'd say, suppose we had something, I guess some vector of degree at most m, right? So suppose, I guess, write it like this, b0 plus b1x plus b2x squared plus da-da-da-da-da-da all the way to bmxm. So suppose I've got something in this in there, I need to show it spans, right? So what do we have to do? We need to find the coefficients, right? So maybe call this thing W, right? So let me put it in terms of zip then. How about we need to find, right? Okay, so for the first option, we must prove that all of those scalars A0 through AM are all 0. Okay. For this one, we must find scalars C0 through CM in the field, to be clear, with what? Well, W has to be C0 times P0 plus C1 times P1 plus da-da-da-da-da plus CM times PM, right? So either we have to show how to take an arbitrary polynomial and represent it as a combination of these P's, knowing very little about the P's except their degrees, right? Or we have to show that if we've represented the zero polynomial as a combination of the p's, then it's actually a trivial combination, right? The coefficients are all 0. So those are our options, right? maybe we're still not sure. Let's write down what it means for the for the degree of PJ to be J. Right? Maybe that'll give us a better idea.
Okay.
So let's say that P0. Let's make up some. Pick a letter here. How about I'll have to come up with some notation here. How about D00? So it'd be like a triangle. Okay? I know that each of the degrees. The degree of the jth one is exactly j, right? So that means that the linear term can't be zero. If it was zero, then the degree would be zero or less, right? If you have the zero polynomial, its degree is defined to be negative infinity. So even when you say degree zero, you mean a non-zero constant polynomial. Okay. We get all the way to Pm, right? It's going to be, in my notation, I guess it would be like this, right? But since this has degree m, the mth order term can't be zero, right? Because the degree is m.
So if you've taken a linear algebra class before, you should think of this as basically we've got a triangular matrix, right? A lower triangular matrix, and all the diagonal terms are off zero.
Even if you haven't taken a linear algebra class before, the diagonals really do help us out here. Basically, the diagonals don't step on each other. Is there a shortcut? Have I made this too hard? It looks like, either way, it looks like we're trying to solve some big system of equations. It seems like the wrong thing to do. This is supposed to be this kind of abstract theoretical class. We're not supposed to have a huge computation. Right? So, what we need is a more clever approach. So, if you read the proof of something back when, if you approach this directly, the clever way to do it is you say, look at the last of these a's that's non-zero, you say, suppose they're not all zero. Look at the last one that's not zero.
And this came up in 2A. Right? Yeah, in the proof of the linear dependence lemma 221. You look at the last A that's not zero, and then you use that to express PJ as a combination of the earlier P's, right? And that's how you prove that if you have a list where every vector is on, where every vector avoids the span of the earlier vectors, then the whole list is independent. Okay? So use 221 to prove independence. Okay, so here we go. So here's how we do it. So the first polynomial is not the zero polynomial, and for everyone after that, if you look at polynomial pj plus 1, say, it's not in the span of the earlier stuff. Why not? Because the degree of any combination, so I'll just use whatever letters here. E0. Okay. If I take a combination of polynomials and their degrees are each at most j, right, then the degree of the combination is at most j, right? Okay. But the degree of pj plus 1 is j plus 1. So it's bigger than j. So, for example, the quadratic one, p2, can't be a combination of the earlier two, because the combinations of those two will be either zero, non-zero constant, or linear. But they'll never give you a non-zero quadratic coefficient. So that's the, I think, the royal road, so to speak, right? That's the smoothest path to a proof here. Okay. So on the list, nothing is in the span of the earlier stuff. Okay. So by 221, our list really is independent. And we only need to prove independence or spanning. So these were kind of, these two options here, these were the direct approach, right? These would be how direct proofs would go. But neither one of them really looked that good, so we looked, and there was a slicker way to do it. The slightly less slick way to do it, right, would basically been to have reinvented the wheel. You would have looked at the argument in the proof of 221, or you'd come up with it yourself independently, and you would have said, you know, like I said earlier, you know, if the A's weren't all zero, consider the last non-zero A sub J, right, and use that to prove that you have some kind of redundancy, PJ in the span of the earlier one. Okay. So that's the trick. Questions?
So we'll say
your homework is numbers 13 and 14.